warded hooves had them down to Leisha's father's house in minutes. Again, Leisha was struck hard by nostalgia, and again she shoved the sentiment aside. How many hours until sunset? Not enough, that was sure. The children and the elderly had begun to arrive, gathering in the yard. Brianne and Mary had already put them to work collecting tools. Mary's eyes were hollow as she watched the children. It hadn't been easy to convince her to leave her two children at the Holy House, but at last reason prevailed. Their father was staying, and if things went badly, the other children would need their mother. Ilona stormed out of the house as they arrived. "Is this your idea?" she demanded. "Turning my house into a barn?" Leisha pushed right past the warded man at her side. Ilona had no choice but to fall in behind them as they entered the house. "Yes, Mother," she said. "It was my idea. We may not have space for everyone, but the children and elderly who have avoided the flux thus far should be safe here, whatever else happens."
"I won't have it," Ilona barked.
Leisha whirled on her.
"You have no choice," she shouted. "You were right that we have the only strong wards left in town. So you can either suffer here in a crowded house, or stand and fight with the others. But Creator help me, the young and the old are staying behind Father's wards tonight."
Ilona glared at her. "You wouldn't speak to me so if your father were well."
"If he were well, he would have invited them himself,"
Leisha said, not backing down an inch. She turned her attention to the warded man.
"The paper shop is through these doors," she told him, pointing. "You should have space to work, and my father's warding tools. The children are collecting every weapon in town and will bring them to you."
The warded man nodded and vanished into the shop without a word. "Where in the world did you find that one?" Ilona asked.
"He saved us from demons on the road," Leisha said, going to her father's room. "I don't know if it will do any good," Ilona warned, putting a hand on the door. "Midwife Darcy says it's in the Creator's hands now."
"Nonsense," Leisha said, entering the room and immediately going to her father's side. He was pale and damp with sweat, but she didn't recoil. She placed a hand to his forehead and then ran her sensitive fingers over his throat, wrists, and chest. While she worked, she asked her mother questions about his symptoms, how long they had been manifest, and what she and Midwife Darcy had tried thus far. Ilona wrung her hands, but answered as best she could.
"Many of the others are worse," Leisha said. "Da is stronger than you give him credit for."
For once, Ilona had no belittling retort.
"I'll brew a potion for him," Leisha said. "He'll need to be dosed regularly, at least every 3 hours."
She took a parchment and began writing instructions in a swift hand.
"You're not staying with him?" Ilona asked.
Leisha shook her head.
"There's near to 200 people in the Holy House that need me, Mum," she said. "Many of them worse off than Da."
"They have Darcy to look after them," Ilona argued.
"Darcy looks as if she hasn't slept since the flux started," Leisha said. "She's dead in her feet, and even at her best, I wouldn't trust her cures against this sickness. If you stay with Da and follow my instructions, he'll be more likely to see the dawn than most in Cutter's Hollow."
"Leisha?" her father moaned. "Is that you?"
Leisha rushed to his side, sitting on the edge of the bed and taking his hand.
"Yes, Da," she said, her eyes watering. "It's me."
"You came," Ernie whispered, his lips curling into a slow smile. His fingers squeezed Leisha's hand weakly. "I knew you would."
"Of course I came," Leisha said.
"But you have to go," Ernie sighed.
When Leisha gave no reply, he patted her hand.
"Heard what you said. Go, do what needs to be done. Just seeing you has given me new strength."
Leisha half sobbed, but tried to mask it as a laugh. She kissed his forehead.
"Is it as bad as all that?" Ernie whispered.
"A lot of folks are going to die tonight," Leisha said.
Ernie's hand tightened on hers, and he sat up a bit.
"Then you see to it that it's no more than need be," he said.
I'm proud of you, and I love you. I love you, Da, Leisha said, hugging him tightly. She wiped her eyes and left the room. Roger tumbled about the tiny aisle of the makeshift hospital as he pantomimed the daring rescue the warded man had performed a few nights earlier. But then, he went on, standing between us and the camp was the biggest rock demon I've ever seen. He leapt atop a table and reached his arms into the air, waving them to show they were still not high enough to do the creature justice. 15 feet tall it was, Roger said, with teeth like spears and a horned tail that could smash a horse. Leisha and I stopped up short, but did the warded man hesitate? No. He walked on, calm as seventh-day morning, and looked the monster right in the eyes. Roger enjoyed the wide eyes surrounding him and hesitated, letting the tense silence build before shouting, "Bam!" and clapping his hands together. Everyone jumped. Just like that, Roger said, the warded man's horse, black as night and seeming like a demon itself, slammed its horns through the demon's back. The horse had horns? An old man asked, raising a gray eyebrow as thick and bushy as a squirrel tail. Propped up in his pallet, the stump of his right leg soaked his bandages in blood. Oh, yes, Roger confirmed, sticking fingers up behind his ears and getting coughing laughs. Great ones of shining bright metal, strapped on by its bridle and sharply pointed, etched with wards of power. The most magnificent beast you have ever seen, it is. Its hooves struck the beast like thunderbolts, and as it smote the demon to the ground, we ran for the circle and were safe. What about the horse? One child asked. The warded man gave a whistle. Roger put his fingers to his lips and emitted a shrill sound. And his horse came galloping through the corlings, leaping over the wards and into the circle. He clapped his hands against his thighs in a galloping sound and leapt to illustrate the point. The patients were riveted by his tale, taking their minds off their sickness and the impending night. More, Roger knew he was giving them hope. Hope that Leisha could cure them. Hope that the warded man could protect them. He wished he could give himself hope as well. Leisha had the children scrub out the big vats her father used to make paper slurry, using them to brew potions on a larger scale than she had ever attempted. Even Bruna's stores quickly ran out, and she passed word to Brienne, who had the children ranging far and wide for hog root and other herbs. Frequently, her eyes flicked to the sunlight filtering through the window, watching it crawl across the shop's floor. The day was waning. Not far off, the warded man worked with similar speed, his hand moving with delicate precision as he painted wards onto axes, picks, hammers, spears, arrows, and sling stones. The children brought him anything that might possibly be used as a weapon, and collected the results as soon as the paint dried, piling them in carts outside. Every so often, someone came running in to relay a message to Leisha or the warded man. They gave instructions quickly, sending the runner off and turning back to their work. With only a pair of hours before sunset, they drove the carts back through the steady rain to the Holy House. The villagers stopped work at the sight of them, coming quickly to help Leisha unload her cures. A few approached the warded man to assist unloading his cart, but a look from him turned them away. Leisha went to him carrying a heavy stone jug. "Tampweed and skyflower," she said, handing it to him. "Mix it with the feed of 3 cows and see that they eat it all." The warded man took the jug and nodded. As she turned to go into the holy house, he caught her arm. "Take this," he said, handing her one of his personal spears. It was 5 feet long, made from light ash wood. Wards of power were etched into the metal tip, sharpened to a wicked edge. The shaft, too, was carved with defensive wards, lacquered hard and smooth, the butt capped in warded steel. Leisha looked at it dubiously, making no move to take it. "Just what do you expect me to do with that?" she asked. "I'm an herb." "This is no time to recite the gatherer's oath," the warded man said, shoving the weapon at her.
Your makeshift hospital is barely warded. If our line fails, that spear may be all that stands between the Corlings and your charges. What will your oath demand then?
Leisha scowled, but she took the weapon.
She searched his eyes for something more, but his wards were back in place, and she could no longer see his heart. She wanted to throw down the spear and wrap him in her arms, but she couldn't bear to be rebuffed again.
Well, good luck, she managed to say.
The warded man nodded. And to you. He turned to attend his cart, and Leisha stared after him, wanting to scream. The warded man's muscles unclenched as he moved away. It had taken all his will to turn his back on her, but they couldn't afford to confuse one another tonight. Forcing Leisha from his mind, he turned his thoughts to the coming battle. The Krasian holy book, the Evesia, contained accounts of the conquests of Kaji, the first deliverer. He had studied it closely when learning the Krasian tongue. The war philosophy of Kaji was sacred in Krasia, and had seen its warriors through centuries of knightly battle with the Corlings. There were four divine laws that governed battle. Be unified in purpose and leadership. Do battle at a time and place of your choosing. Adapt to what you cannot control and prepare the rest. Attack in ways the enemy will not expect, finding and exploiting their weaknesses. A Krasian warrior was taught from birth that the path to salvation lay in killing Alagai. When Jardir called for them to leap from the safety of their wards, they did so without hesitation, fighting and dying, secure in the knowledge that they were serving Evaram and would be rewarded in the afterlife. The warded man feared the hollowers would lack the same unity of purpose, failing to commit themselves to the fight. But watching as they scurried to and fro, readying themselves, he thought he might perhaps be underestimating them. Even in Tibbet's Brook, everyone came and stood by their neighbors in hard times. It was what kept the hamlets alive and thriving, despite their lack of warded walls. If he could keep them occupied, keep them from despairing when the demons rose, perhaps they would fight as one. If not, everyone in the Holy House would die this night. The strength of Krasia's resistance was due as much to Kaji's second law, choosing terrain, as it was to the warriors themselves. The Krasian maze was carefully designed to give the Dal Shaaram layers of protection and to funnel the demons to places of advantage. One side of the Holy House faced the woods, where wood demons held sway. And two more faced the wrecked streets and rubble of the town. Too many places for Corlings to take cover or hide. But past the cobbles of the main entrance lay the town square. If they could funnel the demons there, they might have a chance. They were unable to clean the greasy ash off the rough stone walls of the Holy House and warded in the rain. So the windows and great doors had been boarded and nailed shut, hasty wards chalked onto the wood. Ingress was limited to a small side entrance, with ward stones laid about the doorway. The demons would have an easier time getting through the wall. The very presence of humans out in the naked night would act as a magnet to demons. But nevertheless, the warded man had taken pains to funnel the Corlings away from the building and flanks, so that the path of least resistance would drive them to attack from the far end of the square. At his direction, the villagers had placed obstacles around the other sides of the holy house and interspersed hastily made ward posts, signs he had painted with wards of confusion. Any demon charging past them to attack the walls of the building would forget its intent and inevitably be drawn toward the commotion in the town square. Beside the square on one side was a day pen for the tender's livestock. It was small, but its new ward posts were strong. A few animals milled around the man, erecting a rough shelter within. The other side of the square had been dug with trenches, quickly filling with mucky rainwater, to urge flame demons to take an easier path. Leisha's oil was a thick sludge atop the water. The villagers had done well in enacting Kaji's third law, preparation. Steady rain had made the square slick, a thin film of mud forming on the hard-packed dirt. The warded man's messenger circles were set about the battlefield as he had directed, points of ambush and retreat, and a deep pit had been dug and covered with a muddy tarp. Thick, viscous grease was being spread on the cobbles with brooms. And the fourth law, attacking the enemy in a way they wouldn't expect, would take care of itself. The Corlings wouldn't expect them to attack at all. "I did as you asked," a man said, approaching him as he pondered the terrain. "Eh?" the warded man said. "I'm Ben, sir," the man said. "Mary's husband." The warded man just stared. "The glassblower," he clarified, and the warded man's eyes finally lit with recognition. "Let's see, then," he said. Ben produced a small glass flask. "It's thin, like you asked," he said. "Fragile." The warded man nodded. "How many did you and your apprentices have time to make?" he asked. 3 dozen, Ben said. "May I ask what they're for?" The warded man shook his head. "You'll see soon enough," he said. "Bring them and find me some rags." Roger approached him next. "I've seen Leisha's spear," he said. "I've come for mine." The warded man shook his head. "You're not fighting," he said. "You're staying inside with the sick." Roger stared at him. "But you told Leisha—" "To give you a spear is to rob you of your strength," the warded man cut him off. "Your music would be lost out in the din outside, but inside it'll prove more potent than 12 spears. If the Corlings break through, I'm counting on you to hold them back until I arrive." Roger scowled, but he nodded and headed into the holy house. Others were already waiting for his attention. The warded man listened to reports on their progress, assigning further tasks that were leapt to immediately. The villagers moved with hunched quickness, like hares ready to flee at any moment. No sooner than he had sent them off, Stephanie came storming up to him, a group of angry women at her back.
"What's this about sending us up to Bruna's hut?" the woman demanded.
"The wards there are strong," the warded man said. "There's no room for you in the holy house or Leisha's family home."
"We don't care about that," Stephanie said. "We're going to fight."
The warded man looked at her. Stephanie was a tiny woman, barely 5 feet and thin as a reed. She was well into her 50s. Her skin was thin and rough, like worn leather. Even the smallest wood demon would tower over her. But the look in her eyes told him it didn't matter. She was going to fight no matter what he said. The Krasians might not allow women to fight, but that was their failing. He wouldn't deny any who were willing to stand in the night. He took a spear off his cart and handed it to her. "We'll find you a place," he promised. Expecting an argument, Stephanie was taken aback, but she took the weapon, nodding once and moving away. The other women came in turn, and he handed a spear to each. The men came at once, seeing the warded man handing out weapons. The cutters took their own axes back, looking at the freshly painted wards dubiously. No axe blow had ever penetrated a wood demon's armor.
"Won't need this," Garrett said, handing back the warded man's spear. "I ain't one for spinning a stick around, but I know how to swing my axe."
One of the cutters brought a girl to him, perhaps 13 summers old.
"My name's Flynn, sir," the cutter said. "My daughter Wanda hunts with me sometimes. I won't have her out in the naked night, but if you let her have a bow behind the wards, you'll find her aim is true."
The warded man looked at the girl. Tall and homely, she had taken after her father in size and strength. He went to Twilight Dancer and pulled down his own U-bow and heavy arrows. "I won't need these tonight," he said to her, and pointed to a high window at the apex of the holy house's roof.
"See if you can pry loose enough boards to shoot from there," he advised.
Wanda took the bow and ran off. Her father bowed and backed away. Tender Jonah limped out to meet him next.
"You should be inside and off that leg," the warded man said, never comfortable around holy men. "If you can't carry a load or dig a trench, you're only in the way out here."
Tender Jonah nodded.
I only wanted to have a look at the defenses, he said.
They should hold, the warded man said with more confidence than he felt.
They will, Jonah said. The Creator wouldn't leave those in his house without succor. That's why he sent you.
I'm not the deliverer, Tender, the warded man said, scowling. No one sent me, and nothing about tonight is assured. Jonah smiled indulgently, the way an adult might at the ignorance of a child.
It's coincidence, then, that you showed up in our moment of need? He asked. It's not for me to say if you are the deliverer or not. But you are here, just like every one of us, because the Creator put you here, and he has reason for everything he does.
He had a reason for fluxing half your village? The warded man asked.
I don't pretend to see the path, Jonah said calmly, but I know it's there all the same. One day we'll look back and wonder how we ever missed it.
Darcy was squatting wearily by Vika's side, trying to cool her feverish brow with a damp cloth when Leisha entered the holy house. Leisha went straight to them, taking the cloth from Darcy.
Get some sleep, she said, seeing the deep weariness in the woman's eyes. The sun will set soon, and we'll all need our strength then. Go, rest while you still can.
Darcy shook her head.
I'll rest when I'm cored, she said. Till then I'll work.
Leisha considered her a moment, then nodded. She reached into her apron and pulled out a dark, gummy substance wrapped in waxed paper.
Chew this, she said. You'll feel cored tomorrow, but it will keep you alert through the night.
Darcy nodded, taking the gum and popping it into her mouth while Leisha bent to examine Vika. She took a skin from around her shoulder, pulling the stopper.
Help her sit up a bit, she said,
and Darcy complied, lifting Vika so that Leisha could give her the potion. She coughed a bit out, but Darcy massaged her throat, helping her swallow until Leisha was satisfied. Leisha rose to her feet and scanned the seemingly endless mass of prone bodies. She had triaged and dealt with the worst of the injured before heading out to Bruna's hut, but there were plenty of hurts still in need of mending, bones to set and wounds to sew, not to mention forcing her potions down dozens of unconscious throats. Given time, she was confident she could drive the flux off. Perhaps a few had progressed too far and would remain sickly or pass, but most of her children would recover, if they made it through the night. She called the volunteers together, distributing medicine and instructing them on what to expect and do when the wounded from outside began to come. Roger watched Leisha and the others work, feeling cowardly as he tuned his fiddle. Inside, he knew the warded man was right, that he should work to his strengths, as Arik had always said. But that didn't make hiding behind stone walls while others stood fast feel any braver. Not long ago, the thought of putting down his fiddle to pick up a tool had been abhorrent, but he had grown tired of hiding while others died for him. If he lived to tell it, he imagined the Battle of Cutter's Hollow would be a tale that outlived his children's children. But what of his own part? Playing the fiddle from hiding was a deed hardly worth a line, let alone a verse. Chapter 31 The Battle of Cutter's Hollow 3:32 AR At the forefront of the square stood the cutters. Chopping trees and hauling lumber had left most of them thick of arm and broad of shoulder, but some, like Jan Gray, were well past their prime, and others, like Wren's son Linder, hadn't yet grown into their full strength. They stood clustered in one of the portable circles, gripping the wet hafts of their axes as the sky darkened. Behind the cutters, the hollow's three fattest cows had been staked in the center of the square. Having consumed Leisha's drugged meal, they slumbered deeply on their feet.
Behind the cows was the largest circle. Those within couldn't match the raw muscle of the cutters, but they had greater numbers. Nearly half of them were women, some as young as 15. They stood grimly alongside their husbands, fathers, brothers, and sons. Marum, Doug, the butcher's burly wife, held a warded cleaver and looked well ready to use it. Behind them lay the covered pit, and then the third circle, directly before the great doors of the holy house, where Stephanie and the others, too old or frail to run about the muddy square, stood fast with long spears. Each one was armed with a warded weapon. Some, those with the shortest reach, also carried round bucklers made from barrel lids, painted with wards of forbiddance. The warded man had made only one of those, but the others had copied it well enough. At the edge of the day pen's fence, behind the ward posts, stood the artillery, children barely in their teens, armed with bows and slings. A few adults had been given one of the precious thundersticks, or one of Ben's thin flasks stuffed with a soaked rag. Young children held lanterns, hooded against the rain, to light the weapons. Those who had refused to fight huddled with the animals under the shelter behind them, which shielded Bruna's festival flamework from the rain. More than a few, like Andy, had gone back on their promise to fight, accepting the scorn of their fellows as they hid behind the wards. As the warded man rode through the square astride Twilight Dancer, he saw others looking toward the pen longingly, fear etched on their faces. There were screams as the corlings rose, and many took a step backward, their resolve faltering. Terror threatened to defeat the hollowers before the battle even began. A few tips from the warded man on where and how to strike were meager against the weight of a lifetime of fear. The warded man noticed Ben shaking. One of his pant legs was soaked and clinging to his twitching thigh, and not from the rain. He dismounted and stood before the glassblower. "Why are you out here, Ben?" he asked, raising his voice so others could hear. "My daughters," Ben said, nodding back toward the holy house. It looked as if the spear he held was going to vibrate right out of his hands. The warded man nodded. Most of the hollowers were there to protect their loved ones lying helpless in the holy house. If not, they would all be in the pen. He gestured to the corlings materializing in the square. "You fear them?" he asked, louder still. Yes, Ben managed, tears mixing with the rain on his cheeks. A glance showed others nodding as well. The warded man stripped off his robes. None of the people had seen him unclad before, and their eyes widened as they took in the wards tattooed over every inch of his body. "Watch," he told Ben, but the command was meant for all. He stepped from the circle, striding up to a 7-foot-tall wood demon that was just beginning to solidify. He looked back, meeting the eyes of as many hollowers as he could. Seeing them watching intently, he shouted, "This is what you fear!" Turning sharply, the warded man struck hard, smashing the flat of his hand against the corling's jaw, knocking the demon down in a flash of magic just as it became fully solid. The corling shrieked in pain, but it recovered quickly, coiling on its tail to spring. The villagers stood open-mouthed, their eyes locked on the scene, sure the warded man would be killed. The wood demon lunged, but the warded man kicked off a sandal and spun, kicking up inside the corling's reach. His warded heel struck its armored chest with a thunderclap, and the demon was sent reeling again, its chest scorched and blackened. A smaller wood demon launched itself at him as he stalked his prey, but the warded man caught its arm and twisted himself behind its back, jabbing his warded thumbs into its eyes. There was a smoking sizzle, and the corling screamed, staggering away and clawing at its face. As the blind corling stumbled about, the warded man resumed his pursuit of the first demon, meeting its next attack head-on. He pivoted and turned the corling's momentum against it, latching on as it stumbled past him and wrapping his warded arms around its head. He squeezed, ignoring the demon's futile attempts to dislodge him, and waited as the feedback built in intensity.
Finally, with a burst of magic, the creature's skull collapsed, and they fell to the mud. The other demons kept their distance as the warded man rose from the corpse, hissing and searching for a sign of weakness. The warded man roared at them, and those closest took a step back from him. "It's not you that should fear them, Ben the Glassblower," the warded man called, his voice like a hurricane. "It is they that should fear you." None of the hollowers made a sound, but many fell to their knees, drawing wards in the air before them. He walked back up to Ben, who was no longer shaking. "Remember that," he said, using his robes to wipe the mud from his wards, "the next time they clutch at your heart." "Deliverer," Ben whispered, and others began to mumble the same. The warded man shook his head sharply, rainwater flying free. "You are the deliverer," he shouted, poking Ben hard in the chest. "And you," he cried, spinning to roughly haul a kneeling man to his feet. "All of you are deliverers," he bellowed, sweeping his arms over all who stood in the night. "If the callings fear a deliverer, let them quail at 100 of them." He shook his fist, and the hollowers roared. The spectacle kept the newly formed demons at bay for a moment, issuing low growls as they stalked back and forth. But their pacing soon slowed, and one by one they crouched, muscles bunching up as they tamped down. The warded man looked to the left flank, his warded eyes piercing the gloom. Flame demons avoided the water-filled trench, but wood demons approached that way, heedless of the wet. "Light it," he called, pointing to the trench with a thumb. Ben struck a flame stick with his thumb, shielding the tiny blaze from the wind and rain as he touched it to the wick of a flame whistle. As the wick sizzled and sparked, Ben uncoiled, flinging it toward the trench. Halfway through its arc, the wick burned down, and a jet of fire exploded from one end of the flame whistle. The thick-wrapped paper tube spun rapidly in blazing pinwheel, emitting a high-pitched whine as it struck the oil sludge in the trench. Wood demons shrieked as the water about their knees burst into flame. They fell back, beating the fire in terror, splashing oil and only spreading the flames. Flame demons cried out in glee as they leapt into the fire, forgetting the water that lay beneath. The warded man smiled at their cries as the water boiled. The flames filled the square with flickering light, and there were gasps from the cutters at the size of the host before them. Wind demons cut the sky, adroit even in the wind and rain. Lissome flame demons darted about, eyes and mouths glowing red, silhouetting the hulking rock demons that stalked the edges of the gathering. And wood demons. So many wood demons.
"It's like the trees of the forest have risen up against the axemen," Yon Grey said in awe, and many of the cutters nodded in horror. "That man a tree yet I can't chop down," Garrod growled, holding his axe at the ready.
The boast filtered through the rank, and the other cutters stood taller. The callings soon found their will, leaping at the cutters, talons leading. The wards of their circle stopped them short, and the cutters drew back to swing. "Hold!" the warded man cried. "Remember the plan!" The men checked themselves, letting the demons hammer the wards in vain. The callings flowed around the circle, looking for a weakness, and the cutters were soon lost from view in a sea of bark-like skin. It was a flame demon no larger than a cat that first spotted the cows. It shrieked, leaping onto the back of one of the animals, talons digging deep. The cow woke and bleated in pain as the tiny calling tore out a piece of hide in its jaws. The sound made the other callings forget the cutters. They fell on the cows in an explosion of gore, tearing the animals to pieces. Blood sprayed high into the air, mixing with the rain before splashing down in the mud. Even a wind demon swooped down to catch a chunk of meat before leaping back into the air. In a twinkling, the animals were devoured, though none of the callings seemed satisfied. They moved toward the next circle, slashing at the wards and drawing sparks of magic in the air. "Hold!" the warded man called again as the people around him tensed. He held his spear back, watching the demons intently. waiting. But then he saw it. The demon stumbled, losing its balance. "Now!" he roared, and leapt from the circle, stabbing right through a demon's head. The hollowers screamed a primal cry and charged, falling upon the drugged Corlings with abandon, hacking and stabbing. The demons shrieked, but thanks to Leisha's potion, their response was sluggish. As instructed, the hollowers worked in small teams, stabbing demons from behind when they turned their attention toward another. Warded weapons flared, and this time it was Demon Iker that arced into the air. Maram chopped the wood demon's arm clean off with her cleaver, and her husband, Doug, stabbed his butcher's knife deep into its armpit. The wind demon that had eaten the drugged meat came crashing down into the square, and Ben drove his spear into it, twisting hard as the warded head flared hot to pierce the Corling's hide. Demon claws couldn't penetrate the ward on the wooden shields, and when the shield-bearers saw this, they gained confidence, striking harder still against the dazed Corlings. But not all the demons had been drugged. Those in the back increased their press to get forward. The warded man waited until their advantage of surprise waned, then cried, "Artillery!" The children in the pen gave a great cry, placing flasks in their slings and launching them at the horde of demons in front of the cutter's circle. The thin glass shattered easily against the bark-like armor of the wood demons, coating them in liquid that clung despite the rain. The demons roared, but couldn't penetrate the ward posts of the small pen. While the Corlings raged, the lantern-bearers ran to and fro, touching the flames to rag-grapped arrowheads dipped in pitch and the wicks of Bruna's flamework. They didn't fire as one as they had been instructed, but it made little difference. With the first arrow, the liquid demon fire exploded across the back of a wood demon, and the creature screamed, thrashing into another and burning it as well. Festival crackers, toss bangs, and flame whistles joined in the volley of arrows, frightening some demons with light and sound, and igniting others. The night lit up as the demons burned. One flame whistle hit the shallow rut in front of the cutter's circle, which stretched the full width of the square. The spark lit the liquid demon fire within, and the fell brew burst into an intense fire, setting several more wood demons alight and cutting the rest off from their fellows. But between the circles and away from the flamework, the battle raged fiercely. The drugged demons fell quickly, but their fellows were uncowed by the armed villagers. Teams were breaking up, and some of the hollowers were taken by fear and stumbled back, giving the Corlings an opening to pounce. "Cutters!" the warded man cried as he spit a flame demon on his spear. With their backs secure, Garrett and the other cutters roared and leapt from their circle, pressing the demons attacking the warded man's group from behind. Even without magic, wood demon hide was as thick and gnarled as old bark, but cutters hacked through bark all day, and the wards on their axes drained away the magic that strengthened it further. Garrett was the first to feel the jolt as the wards tapped into the demon's magic, using the Corling's own power against them. The shock ran up the haft of his axe and made his arms tingle as a split second of ecstasy ran through him. He struck the demon's head clean off and howled, charging the next one in line. Pressed from both sides, the demons were hit hard. Centuries of dominance had taught them that humans, when they fought at all, weren't to be feared, and they were unprepared for the resistance. High in the window of the Holy House's choir loft, Wanda fired her bow with frightening accuracy, every warded arrowhead striking demon flesh like a bolt of lightning. But the smell of blood was thick in the air, and the cries of pain could be heard for miles around. In the distance, Corlings howled in answer to the sound. Reinforcements would soon come, and the humans had none. It wasn't long before the demons recovered. Even without their impenetrable armor, few humans could ever hope to stand toe-to-toe with a wood demon. The smallest of the demons were closer to Garrett in strength than to a normal man. Maram charged a flame demon the size of a large dog, her cleaver already blackened with the demon ichor. She held her shield out defensively, her cleaver arm cocked back and ready. The Corling shrieked and spat fire at her. She brought up her shield to block, but the ward painted there had no power over fire, and the wood exploded into flames. Maram screamed as her arm ignited, dropping and rolling in the mud. The demon leapt at her, but her husband Doug was there to meet it. The heavy butcher gutted the flame demon like a hog, but screamed himself as its molten blood struck his leather apron, setting it alight. The wood demon ducked down to all fours under Evan's wild axe swing, springing up when he was off guard and bearing him to the ground. He screamed as the jaws came for him, but there was a bark, and his wolfhounds crashed into the demon from the side, knocking it away. Evan recovered quickly, chopping down on the prone Corling, though not before it disemboweled one of the giant dogs. Evan cried in rage and hacked again before whirling to find another foe, his eyes wild. Just then, the trench of demon fire burned out, and the wood demons trapped on the far side began to advance again. "Thundersticks!" the warded man cried as he trampled a rock demon under Twilight Dancer's hooves. At the call, the eldest of his artillery took out some of the precious and volatile weapons. There were less than a dozen, for Bruna had been niggardly in their making, lest the powerful tools be abused. Wicks flared, and the sticks were launched at the approaching demons. One villager dropped his rain-slick stick in the mud and bent quickly to snatch it up, but not quickly enough. The thunderstick went off in his hands, blowing him and his lamp-bearer to pieces in a blast of fire, as the concussive force knocked several others in the pen to the ground, screaming in pain. One of the thundersticks exploded between a pair of wood demons. Both were thrown down, twisted wrecks. One, its bark-like skin aflame, didn't rise. The other, extinguished by the mud, twitched and put a talon under itself as it struggled to rise. Already its fell magic was healing its wounds. Another thunderstick sailed at a 9-foot-tall rock demon, which caught it in a talon and leaned in close, peering at the curious object as it went off. But when the smoke had cleared, the demon stood unfazed and continued on toward the villagers in the square. Wanda planted 3 arrows in it, but it shrieked and came on, its anger only doubled. Garrod met it before it reached the others, returning its shriek with a roar of his own. The burly cutter ducked under its first blow and planted his axe in its sternum, glorying in the rush of magic that ran up his arms. The demon collapsed at last, and Garrod had to stand atop it to pull his weapon free of its thick armor. A wind demon swooped in, its hooked talons nearly cutting Flynn in half. From the choir loft window, Wanda gave a cry and killed the Corling with an arrow to the back. But the damage was done, and her father collapsed. A swipe from a wood demon took Wren's head clean off, launching it far from his body. His axe fell into the muck, even as his son Linder hacked the arm from the offending demon. Near the pen on the right flank, Yon Grey was struck a glancing blow, but it was enough to drop the old man to the ground. The Corling stalked him as he clutched the mud, trying to rise. But Andy gave a choked cry and leapt from the warded pen, grabbing Wren's axe and burying it in the creature's back. Others followed his lead, their fear forgotten, leaving the safety of the pen to take up the weapons of the fallen, or to drag the wounded to safety. Keet stuffed a rag into the last of the demon fire flasks, lighting it and hurling it into the face of a wood demon to cover his sisters as they pulled a man into the pen. The demon burst into flames, and Keet cheered until the flame demon leapt atop the immolated Corling, shrieking in glee as it basked in the fire. Keet turned and ran, but it leapt onto his back and bore him down. The warded man was everywhere in the battle, killing some demons with his spear, the others with only bare hands and feet. Twilight Dancer kept close to him, striking with hoof and horn. They burst in wherever the fighting was thickest, scattering the Corlings and leaving them as prey for the others. He lost count of how many times he kept demons from landing a killing blow, letting their victims regain their feet and return to the fight. In the chaos, a group of Corlings stumbled through the center line and past the second circle, stepping onto the tarp and falling into the warded spikes laid at the bottom of the pit. Most of them twitched wildly, impaled on the killing magic, but one of the demons avoided the spikes and clawed its way back out of the pit.
A warded axe took its head before it could return to the fight or flee. But the Corlings kept coming, and once the pit was revealed, they flowed smoothly around it. There was a cry, and the warded man turned to see a harsh fight for the great doors of the Holy House. The Corlings could smell the sick and weak within, and were in a frenzy to break through and begin the slaughter. Even the chalked wards were gone now, washed away by the ever-present rain. The thick grease spread in the cobbles outside the doors slowed the Corling somewhat. More than one fell on its tail or skidded into the wards of the third circle, but they flexed their claws, digging in to secure their footing, and continued on. The women at the doors stabbed out from the safety of their circle with their long spears, and held their own for a moment, but Stephanie's spearhead caught fast in the gnarled skin of one demon, and she was yanked outward, her trailing foot catching the rope of the portable circle. In an instant, the wards fell out of alignment, and the net collapsed. The warded man moved with all the speed he could muster, taking the 12-foot-wide pit in a single leap, but even he couldn't move fast enough to prevent the slaughter. Bodies were being flung about in bloody abandon when he came crashing in, attacking wildly. When the melee was over, he stood panting with a few surviving women, Stephanie, amazingly, among them. She was splatted with ichor, but seemed none the worse for wear, her eyes full of hard determination. A great wood demon charged them, and they turned as one to stand firm. But the Corling crouched just out of reach and sprang, clearing them fully to reach the stone wall of the Holy House. Its claws found easy purchase between the piled stones, and it climbed out of reach before the warded man could catch its swinging tail. "Look out!" the warded man called to Wanda. But the girl was too intent on aiming her bow and didn't hear until it was too late. The demon caught her in its claws and threw her back over its head, as if she were nothing but a nuisance. The warded man ran hard and skidded across the grease and mud on his knees, catching her bloody and broken body before it struck the ground. But as he did, the demon pulled itself through the open window and into the Holy House. The warded man ran for the side entrance, but then skidded to a halt as he turned the corner, his way barred by a dozen demons standing dazed by his wards of confusion. He roared, leaping into their midst, but he knew he would never make it inside in time. The stone walls of the Holy House echoed with screams of pain, and the cries of the demons just outside the doors had everyone in the Holy House on edge. Inside, some wept openly, or rocked slowly back and forth, shaking with fear. Some raved and thrashed. Leisha fought to keep them calm, speaking soothing words to the most reasonable and drugging the least, keeping them from tearing their stitches or hurting themselves in a feverish rage. "I'm fit to fight," Smith insisted, the big innkeeper dragging Roger across the floor as the poor jongleur tried in vain to restrain him. "You're not well," Leisha shouted, rushing over. "You'll be killed if you go out there." As she went, she emptied a small bottle into a rag. Pressed to his face, the fumes would put him down quickly. "My Stephanie is out there," Smith cried. "My son and daughters!" He caught Leisha's arm as she reached out with the cloth, shoving her violently aside. She tumbled into Roger, and the two of them went down in a tangle. He reached for the bar on the main doors. "Smith, no!" Leisha cried. "You'll let them in and get us all killed!" But the fever-mad innkeeper was heedless of her warning, grabbing the bar in two hands and heaving. Darcy grabbed his shoulder, spinning him around to catch her fist on his jaw. Smith twisted around once more with the force of the blow and collapsed to the ground. "Sometimes the direct approach works better than herbs and needles," Darcy told Leisha, shaking the sting from her hand. "I see why Bruna needed a stick," Leisha agreed, the two of them ducking under Smith's arms to haul him back to his pallet. Beyond the doors, the sounds of battle raged. "Sounds like all the demons in the core are trying to get in," Darcy muttered. There was a crash above, and a scream from Wanda.
The choir loft railing shattered, and beams of wood came crashing down, killing the one unfortunate man directly below and wounding another. A huge shape dropped into their midst, howling as it landed on another patient, and tore out her throat before she even knew what struck her. The wood demon rose to its full height, huge and terrible, and Alicia felt her heart stop. She and Darcy froze, Smit a dead weight between them. The spear the warded man had given her leaned against a wall, far from reach, and even if she had it in her hands, she doubted it would do much to slow the giant coiling. The creature shrieked at them, and she felt her knees turn to water. But then Roger was there, interposing himself between them and the demon. The coiling hissed at him, and he swallowed hard. Every instinct told him to run and hide, but instead he tucked his fiddle under his chin and brought bow to string, filling the holy house with a mournful, haunting melody. The coiling hissed at the jongleur and bared its teeth, long and sharp as carving knives, but Roger didn't slow his playing, and the wood demon held its ground, cocking its head and staring at him curiously. After a few moments, Roger began to rock from side to side. The demon, its eyes locked on the fiddle, began to do the same. Encouraged, Roger took a single step to the left. The demon mirrored him. He stepped back to the right, and the coiling did the same. Roger went on, walking around the wood demon in a slow, wide arc. The mesmerized beast turned as he went, until it was facing away from the shocked and terrified patients. By then, Leisha had set Smit down and retrieved her spear. It seemed little more than a thorn, the demon's reach far longer, but she stepped forward nonetheless, knowing she would never get a better chance. She gritted her teeth and charged, burying the warded spear in the coiling's back with all her might. There was a flash of power and a burst of ecstasy as the magic ran up her arms, and then Leisha was thrown back. She watched as the demon screamed and thrashed about, trying to dislodge the glowing spear still sticking from its back. Roger dodged aside as it crashed into the great doors in its death throes, breaking open the portal even as it fell dead. Demons howled with glee and charged the opening, but they were met by Roger's music. Gone was the soothing, hypnotizing melody, replaced by sharp and jarring sounds that had the coilings clawing at their ears as they stumbled backward. Leisha! The side door opened with a crash, and Leisha turned to see the warded man, awash in demon ichor and his own blood, burst into the room looking about frantically. He saw the wood demon lying dead and turned to meet her eyes. His relief was palpable. She wanted to throw herself into his arms, but he turned and charged for the shattered doors. Roger alone held the entrance, his music holding the demon's back as surely as any ward net. The warded man shoved the wood demon's corpse aside, pulling the spear free and throwing it back to Leisha. Then he was gone into the night. Leisha looked out upon the carnage in the square, and her heart clenched. Dozens of her children lay dead and dying in the mud, even as the battle continued to rage. "Darcy!" she cried, and when the woman rushed to her side, they ran out into the night, pulling wounded inside. Wanda lay gasping on the ground when Leisha reached her, her clothes torn and bloody where the demon had clawed her. A wood demon charged them as she and Darcy bent to lift her, but Leisha pulled a vial from her apron and threw it, shattering the thin glass in its face. The demon shrieked as the dissolvent ate away its eyes, and the two herb-gatherers hurried away with their charge. They deposited the girl inside, and Leisha shouted instructions to one of her assistants before running out again. Roger stood at the entrance, the screeching of his fiddle forming a wall of sound that held the way clear, shielding Leisha and the others who began to drag the wounded inside. The battle waxed and waned through the night, letting those villagers too tired to go on stagger back to their circles or into the holy house to catch their breath or gulp down a swallow of water. There was an hour when not a demon could be seen, and another after that when a pack that must have come running from miles away fell upon them.
The rain stopped at some point, but no one could recall quite when, too preoccupied with attacking the enemy and helping the wounded. The cutters formed a wall at the great doors, and Roger roamed the square, driving demons back with his fiddle as the wounded were collected. By the time dawn's first light peeked over the horizon, the mud of the square had been churned into a foul stew of human blood and demon ichor, bodies and limbs scattered everywhere. Many jumped in fright as the sun struck the demon corpses, setting their flesh alight. Like bursts of liquid demon fire all over the square, the sun finished the battle, incinerating the few demons that still twitched. The warded man looked out at the faces of the survivors, half his fighters at least, and was amazed at the strength and determination he saw. It seemed impossible that these were the same people who were so broken and terrified less than a day before. They might have lost many in the night, but the Hollowers were stronger than ever.
"Creator be praised,"
Tender Jonas said, staggering out into the square on his crutch, drawing wards in the air as the demons burned in the morning light. He made his way to the warded man and stood before him.
"This is thanks to you," he said.
The warded man shook his head.
"No. You did this," he said. "All of you."
Jonah nodded.
"We did," he agreed. "But only because you came and showed us the way. Can you still doubt this?"
The warded man scowled.
"For me to claim this victory as my own cheapens the sacrifice of all that died during the night," he said. "Keep your prophecies, Tender. These people don't need them."
Jonah bowed deeply.
"As you wish," he said.
But the warded man sensed the matter wasn't closed. Chapter 32. Cutters No More. 3:32 AR. Leisha waved as Roger and the warded man rode up the path. She set her brush back in its bowl on the porch as they dismounted.
"You learn quickly," the warded man said, coming up to study the ward she had painted on the rails. "These would hold a horde of Corlings at bay."
"Quickly?" Roger asked.
"Night, that's under Sid. It's not been a month since you couldn't tell a wind ward from a flame."
"He's right," the warded man said.
"I've seen 5-year journeyman warders whose lines weren't half so neat."
Leisha smiled.
"I've always been a quick study," she said. "And you and my father are good teachers. I only wish I had bothered to learn sooner."
The warded man shrugged.
"Would that we could all go back and make decisions based on what was to come."
"I think I'd have lived my whole life different," Roger agreed. Leisha laughed, ushering them inside the hut.
"Supper's almost ready," she said, heading for the fire.
"How did the village council meeting go?" she asked, stirring the steaming pot.
"Idiots," the warded man grumbled.
She laughed again.
"That well."
"The council voted to change the village name to Deliverer's Hollow," Roger said.
"It's only a name," Leisha said, joining them at the table and pouring tea.
"It's not the name that bothers, it's the notion," the warded man said. "I've gotten the villagers to stop calling me Deliverer to my face, but I still hear it whispered behind my back."
"It'll go easier for you if you just embrace it," Roger said. "You can't stop a story like that. By now every jongleur north of the Crasian Desert is telling it."
The warded man shook his head.
"I won't lie and pretend to be something I'm not to make life easier. If I'd wanted an easy life..."
He trailed off.
"What of the repairs?" Leisha asked, pulling him back to them as his eyes went distant.
Roger smiled.
"With the Hollowers back on their feet thanks to your cures, it seems a new house goes up every day," he said. "You'll be able to move back into the village proper soon."
Leisha shook her head.
"This hut is all I have left of Bruna. This is my home now." "This far from the village, you'll be outside the forbiddance," the warded man warned.
Leisha shrugged.
I understand why you laid out the new streets in the form of a warding, she said. But there are benefits to being outside the forbiddance as well.
Oh? The warded man asked, raising a warded brow.
What benefit could there be to living on land?